You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramilla, credentialed reporter, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order. So today's show, I've got concerns about Tyler Hero. Bam Adebayo's jumper is looking promising, but first, as has so often been the case lately, the news of the day is James Harden. Reporter on Twitter mentioning that James Harden is looking to be moved shortly, that the Rockets are engaged in talks, and that a couple of new suitors, the Boston Celtics and Toronto Raptors, are reportedly also showing interest. There's a number of different levels to this. Reporters that are somewhat sourced, making some claims here, some reporters with some dubious sources. As a media member myself, I never want to question anybody's sources. Like, I mean, I don't remember her name now, but there was the reporter who a couple months ago drew some attention by saying that quite clearly Giannis Antetokounmpo was shopping for a house and intended to sign a long-term deal with Miami Heat. And that didn't seem like it panned out the way she had originally projected. So look, this is fake news season. The off season almost always is. It's very hard to get legitimate sources about, you know, the inner workings of what the front office will do. And there's also machinations at play here. The team is going to be letting loose some news here and there. They're going to be leaking out some things here in order to draw some attention or to drive the price up. Maybe there isn't a market for James the way the Rockets expect it to, because he's viewed as a headache, because he's got an expensive contract, because who knows if he's engaged and ready to play. You don't want to blow up your team. Look, I think Daryl Morey in Philadelphia is as closely aligned to James Harden as any, but he knows firsthand what it takes to build a team around Harden, and that doesn't always guarantee victory. So maybe he's just not as willing to include a Ben Simmons or any other players in order to acquire him. Maybe he's not willing to mortgage the team's future. Maybe Doc Rivers, the coach they just hired, doesn't want to coach James Harden. Who knows? Maybe Miami doesn't want to either. I feel like this is somehow a metaphor or like a slice of life, a microcosm of what life with Harden must be like, where he dominates the headlines for the team so completely, because it just seems like we're always thinking about him and what happens, waiting for the other shoe to drop. The reason why I think these kind of tweets are building some steam, and I'll add my two cents here. This is what I think. Monday is not exactly a deadline, of course. There's no set time frame. I've already mentioned, and my conversation with Jackson Gatlin of Locked On Rockets, if you recall that from a couple weeks ago, we were covering this not well ahead of everybody, but we were lockstep with everybody else regarding the James Harden news. When it was just starting to leak out around the country nationally that he was interested in Miami or had listed Miami as a potential suitor, we recorded an episode. Anyway, as far as Jackson's opinion is concerned, the team probably wants to keep James on the roster for some time. They might not want to trade him as quickly as possible, and they certainly don't want to give up on him for nearly nothing. You know, he is the centerpiece of that team. They've acquired John Wall. They've got some other players like Christian Wood and of course, Bookie Cousins. But James Harden is an MVP. He's a top five player in the league. And I think you want to keep him on your roster for as much as possible, unless they view it right now where it's impossible to keep him happy and he's going to be disgruntled and he's going to ruin everything they've got going on there currently, which might not be all that much. Then they're probably not looking to trade him as quickly as we think. From other teams' perspective, the teams looking to acquire Harden, the reason why they're making this push, and that's why I think Monday is being viewed amongst league circles as a quote-unquote deadline, is because if you want to acquire Harden, then you have to be able to include a number of players. You're not doing a superstar for superstar swap. Now, we've heard the Toronto Raptors are looking to include Pascal Siakam. That's a nice player. I think that Siakam is a nice name. Again, a very solid player that showed that maybe he might not be the kind of player that you want to build around for the playoffs. He did falter in the playoffs, but so again, as Kyle Lowry, and then he won a championship anyway. As far as Siakam is concerned, I also have questions because the Rockets front court seems a little log jammed. I'm not sure they'd want the centerpiece of their acquisition in exchange for Harden to be another power forward, another 3-4-5, you know, a big who can, you know, stretch the floor somewhat, shows promise and athleticism, and is probably just starting to tap into his potential. Siakam is a great player to acquire, but I don't know that the Rockets would want to do so for a player like Siakam. To me, and I'll say this again, I think Ben Simmons is your better option because he's a all-star level point guard to some degree. And Tyler Hero is also a much better option. Chris Middleton would be a great fit in Houston considering you've already got Cousins, Wood, Wall, etc. But we haven't heard Milwaukee actually gaining any traction as a potential suitor. They might be happy with their team. In any case, as far as Monday is concerned, from other teams looking to acquire Harden, if you're shipping away a number of players, like let's say Miami's proposed deal of Andre Iguodala, Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Hero, maybe Precious Achiuwa, maybe a couple first-round picks, that's a big chunk of your roster. You need to fill that up as much as possible, as quickly as possible, considering the regular season starts in just a couple of days. And for some teams, it starts on Tuesday. So that's why I think Monday is being viewed as a, let's hurry up and get this done. Quit dicking us around. If you want to trade Harden to us, that's fine. But take the deal as currently constructed, and let's not waste any more time. A lot of this is posturing. A lot of this is negotiations with your agent. A lot of it is behind-the-scenes talk of just, you know, again, Harden's trade demand became public a couple months ago, and so much has happened since then, not to mention his trip to Las Vegas, Atlanta, giving out stacks of cash, all these things that have been widely reported. We're all well aware of what James has been doing during the offseason. He looks somewhat out of shape, but I'm pretty sure he can get back in shape very quickly. The point is that for Miami, they want that deal to get done as quickly as possible if they're going to engage in these kinds of talks. My feeling, and I'll wrap this up again, I don't think the deal gets done. I think you kind of bet on acquiring talent in the future. You still have flexibility next year. I don't think Harden is a player that you necessarily want to sacrifice everything for. And if your asking price is what's been reported regarding Houston, then Miami can't do it. If it's more reasonable, you know, then I think Miami is much more willing to trade whomever possible in order to acquire Harden. But right now, as I mentioned last week, the reported price tag was an all-star level player, a number of other filler type contracts, and then a plethora of first-round picks. That seems fair for a talented player like Harden, but it also seems unreasonable for any team to chalk up that much and take a huge gamble in the process. Again, I've mentioned also that I think Harden would be a great fit in Miami. I think he's a great player. I think you could build around him. I don't have any of the concerns that Heat Twitter does about his temperament or his personality or what he's going to be like in South Beach or whether or not he's going to go to Tootsie's. He's a baller. He's committed. He's always played hard. He's always been a really, really good player ever since his Oklahoma City days. I don't have those same issues or hangups or concerns. He is perhaps not the most aesthetically pleasing player as far as his style of play is concerned, but you know what? You'll live with it when he's dropping 35-plus points per game and making life easier for everybody else left on this roster, including your two all-stars in Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, who, again, have signed off on this deal. So the decision, well out of our hands. Your concerns notwithstanding, my concerns notwithstanding, I think if they've signed off on it and if Miami's front office can pull the trigger on a deal that makes sense to them, it doesn't jeopardize their future, doesn't handicap them a couple years down the road, then they'll go ahead and make that deal. Let's see how it plays out. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a tense couple of hours, maybe a day or two here. It might be and within 48 hours, I think we'll get the sense from now that Miami is either going to acquire Harden or not. Like, if it extends past Tuesday and Harden is still in Houston, he's not in Miami's future. Not yet. Maybe next offseason. But they're not going to revisit it during the regular season. I think they'll make other changes, perhaps, at the trade deadline, but not a player of Harden's size and stature and everything that he encompasses. You know, he's just a big presence on your team. He changes so much. I don't think that you'd want to make that sacrifice in the middle of a season because then it's just about learning a new style of play, of adjusting to him and having him adjust. I think he could do it. I just don't know it would be as seamless. And if you're looking to win a title, and you are because you want to capitalize on Jimmy Butler's contract, then you don't necessarily make that risk. We'll see what happens next, because I've got a problem with Tyler Hero, and I'm wondering whether or not his playing alongside Duncan Robinson could be an issue. I'll talk about that next here on the number one Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and more. With the NBA season right around the corner, there's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust. That's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. The NBA season just about to start, so don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, it's your online sportsbook experts. This episode is brought to you by 1010. Now, you may have read about it in the New York Times or Forbes, and we're excited to tell you about it. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring, launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueNile.com. And when they're gone, they're gone. We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds. If you're making 2021 plans or looking for a unique and meaningful way to celebrate Valentine's Day, you're definitely going to want to check this out. Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com. Betting on the NBA doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast. Get daily picks and quick-hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. There was something here that I hinted at in the last episode, which you should totally check out, of course, where I kind of highlight what has made KZ Opala and Max Strus stand out so completely this preseason and why they're making an impact for Miami. But my concern at that point in time was that Tyler, maybe I'm reading too much into it. I'll be 100% honest. I'm going to try to be as fair as possible. That's my shtick, if anything. I'm trying to be fair and biased and balanced because so much of sports media is leaning one way or the other. I try to give a much more thorough and, again, balanced perspective. I saw something about Tyler that I'm not sure meshes particularly well with Duncan Robinson, which could play a factor regarding the acquisition of Harden to some degree. I'm not trying intentionally to tie together, but I think a lot of the discussion from Heat Twitter is, do you give up Hero? Do you give up Duncan? Do you give up Kendrick? Do you give up whomever? And I think from the Heat's perspective, obviously their front office would prefer keeping a player like Duncan Robinson, who would be a great fit alongside Harden. He might not necessarily be as great a fit against or alongside Tyler Hero. There was something about the style of play in the preseason victory over the Toronto Raptors that, I talked about in the last episode, where with Tyler starting, and again, I think he is projected to be the starter moving forward, his ball dominance doesn't mesh particularly well with Duncan's style of play and the way Duncan looks to get his shots off. As we all know, Duncan, an excellent catch-and-shoot player, so he's certainly capable of he does play constantly off-ball, but he's also looking to get that one dribble set going where he uses the dribble handoff with Bam so completely and so perfectly, and that's why Bam was the leading assist, or he assisted the most field goals to Duncan last season. Tyler Hero, conversely, and all the times they played together throughout the whole season, a total of 15 assisted field goals from Tyler to Duncan Robinson. And again, I think it was magnified somewhat in the Raptors game where Tyler, he's a bucket. We love that about him. He's aggressive. He's looking to get a shot. He also showed signs of being an improved playmaker in the Orlando bubble. But 15 assists. Like, Jay Crowder was here as of February, had a long hiatus, and still had 10 assists during that stretch. Of the 15 assisted field goals total, and again, some of those are very generously described as assists according to NBA.com, three of them were in the bubble. So after the hiatus against the Phoenix Suns at Oklahoma City during those seeding games that took place before the postseason, one was in January, one in all of December, 10 in October or November when Jimmy was hurt and out of the lineup and Justice was out and then Tyler was playing more. And again, as a rookie, you want to get your vets going a little bit. You don't want to be as aggressive as we've seen Tyler Hero become. And so you're looking to dish the ball more. 10 assists in October, 4 in one game, 3 in another. So it's not like there was an even distribution there either. And again, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I just think it's kind of bizarre that with Tyler playing as much as alongside Duncan as he has, he's not looking to get that shot going. I mean, again, you think about Tyler. He works the screen action with Bam. He's looking to create things off the dribble. He's pulling up, driving into traffic, and then kicking it out to somebody who's cutting. Even some of his assists to Duncan were of the two-point variety. It's not like it was Duncan creating some action there where he was diving to the lane and he was creating something off ball, and then Tyler found him after he had missed a shot attempt or didn't have a clear lane or something of to that effect. Not great. And I wonder if this is a concern for the Heat top brass. I might be seeing things where these things don't exist. But I get the sense that Bam sometimes realizes that with Tyler, Tyler's looking to get that shot going. And that's why sometimes he holds on to the ball and says, no, I'm going to create offense for us. I'm going to initiate the offense. And that's why he starts to work the dribble handoff so effectively with Duncan, because otherwise Tyler might not be looking to get other players going. It's a fine line for him. It's really difficult because you want him to be so aggressive. You want him to be able to attack a defender and the basket as well as he does. And he creates so well off the dribble, and he's so good and has such nice touch around the basket that he can finish at a high level. But part of what makes this offense and made this offense so great last season was the willingness to share the ball. And if Hero is not getting your top three-point shooter going, that's a bit of a concern. Now, there were 5 assisted field goals during the playoffs. 22 for Bam during that stretch, 23 for Jimmy, who we all know, as bad a teammate as he was somehow really, really trying to develop Duncan's confidence, was making sure that he got Duncan going almost every game that they were playing alongside each other. It's no surprise to me that Jimmy was the leading assist getter when it comes to getting Duncan going. 10 assists from Goran to Duncan. So again, they were starting alongside. I understand that Hero's minutes probably didn't always coincide as seamlessly with Duncan, but they played enough. I mean, look, Goran started, Bam started, Jimmy started all alongside Duncan. I get all that. Tyler started on occasion. But still, just 5 assists during the playoffs. And some of them were in that series against Boston when Hero did get some additional playing time. And he was Miami's best bucket scoring option because Duncan had been struggling. So maybe they were putting Hero in a lot more during that time so he could get his offense going. And there was one assist from him against the Lakers in the NBA Finals in Game 6. So again, not much during that series either. So, I think Tyler took a small step as becoming a better playmaker in the bubble in the Orlando playoffs. He still didn't necessarily look to get Duncan going as much as other players did. And that's a legitimate concern. 20 total assists over the course of all last season, for as long and deep a run as that was, from October all the way to October, almost a full calendar year. Man, I don't know. I'm not quite sure if there's something going on there. Again, I think there is just a different style of play with Duncan. He works the dribble handoff so well with Bam, where you know that Bam is making a concerted effort to get him going. Tyler doesn't necessarily work that way. He's looking to get his own shot going. And on occasion, I think he's got a score-first mentality, which is why a lot of people view him, and I do as well, as a potential Sixth Man of the Year candidate or a player alongside the Jamal Crawford or Lou Williams type, where he's going to go get you a bucket because there are concerns about his defense and things of that sort. So it might not necessarily mesh as well, and I'm wondering whether or not other teammates, and I I'm reading into what Bam's doing, but he's holding on to the ball when he could outlet the pass to Tyler to get the offense started in order to initiate a fast break, but instead he'd rather hold it himself and just see if he can work that dribble handoff combination with Duncan, which was so effective and such a lethal weapon, and I totally get that. Is there a wrong way here, or is there a right way? It's hard to tell, right? I mean, the team is successful. You don't want to necessarily question whether or not something's going on there. I don't think there's any source of friction between the two players. I wonder if Tyler can make that adjustment in his game. That would be the biggest question for me, is whether or not he's able to just not necessarily look to get his shot going all the time as regularly as he does, and perhaps try to get other players, specifically Duncan Robinson. You're one of the best shooters in the league. get him a little bit more comfortable, get him a little confident. And I think, again, from Tyler's perspective, coming off the bench, maybe he's trying to be aggressive. He's saying, you know what, I've got the ball in my hands. I got to do more. I'm going to try and attack these backup defenders because, you know, I can get that shot off over anybody. Might as well attack these guys with impunity. I totally get that. But when he's playing alongside Duncan and considering Duncan's gravity and how important his self-esteem is and his confidence is as a shooter, then I think he'd probably want to make those changes a little bit sooner rather than later. And hopefully we'll start to see some evolution in that game because there are concerns for me. But if you're looking at confidence, look no further than Bam Adebayo's jumper. I'll talk about that here in the next segment on Locked On Heat. If you haven't tried Built Bar, I'm not sure what you're waiting for. It's the best tasting protein bar ever. My family and I all love it. They've got 18 amazing flavors, so many that you can choose from. You can build a box of assorted flavors. That's the best thing to me. It gives you the versatility that you're looking for. Kind of like the Heat roster. You've got a lot of options here. And Built Bar satisfies all tastes and all different cravings. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. You don't even know you're eating a protein bar. And of course, though, they're healthy. They're great for health-conscious people. If you're looking to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat, Built Bar is the way to go. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. That's 20% off at BuiltBar.com just by using the promo code LOCKEDON. Coming up in a couple days, my interview with Kelly Olynyk. He'll be on the show, KO. We'll talk about the Orlando bubble, to preview the upcoming season, and so much more. So make sure you get that episode now by subscribing to the show. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Cooper Moorhead of Heat.com did a fantastic job of writing about Bam Adebayo's jumper and how much more confidence he's showing there. And I think I just wanted to talk about it a little bit because to me, it's such a nice evolution for Bam. Something I'm glad to have mentioned during his exit interview because I had started to see that evolution come around during the Orlando bubble and the numbers backed it up. And even now, as this season is progressing, it's starting to show like that's going to be a reliable weapon for him and he's confident in taking that shot. And if that's the case, he becomes so much more dangerous. And, you know, he's starting off offense like that. Like he's starting off his first touch, his first play of the game, you know, using a jab step and letting that 15, 18 footer fly. That's great. That is amazing. You know, that he's showing that kind of confidence. Something we expected it to happen. I expected it to happen, but he's being aggressive. And I think with Bam, if you're looking to contrast what I was just talking about in the previous segment regarding Tyler, you have to walk a line between being aggressive, looking for your shot, and trying to get other players going. And for a player like Bam, who's so good at initiating offense and creating opportunities for others, I think he's not always looking to be aggressive with his offense. He should be, because he's dangerous as not just a shooter now, but also as an incredible rim roller and explosive athlete who can finish around the rim. I mean, he does lack polish to some degree, especially as when he's back to the basket. He does not create in post-up situations very highly. But if he's going to be able to face the basket a little bit more and use a much more reliable jumper, and he's letting that go with some confidence, I think his offense will take a huge leap forward. I think we'll start to see an increased points per game average, of course, and we'll also start to see defenses have to respect that shot because right now they're giving him the room. And I think you're going to learn early on in the season that they can't give him as much room as they had once done. And that sets up the other aspect of the offense. Not only that, if they bite on his jumper, and then we'll have to see whether or not he can incorporate an up fake, which I think would be the next evolutionary step for him. He can drive past almost anybody using his athleticism and speed. If they, you know, are somehow able to switch and pick him up, if another defender steps in his way on the way to the rim, then that opens up Bam as a passer and playmaker to somebody on the perimeter who all of a sudden is much more wide open than they would have been. You can have cutters to back him up. I could see some nice screen action with him where he's able to create and somebody else sets a screen for Bam and he rolls to the rim with the ball in his hand and he can either dish it off to a you know, let's say Jimmy Butler or Duncan or somebody else. you could open up so much of the offense with Bam improving that jumper, you know. And I think the next step of that evolution, of course, is to stretch it out to the three-point line. That would absolutely be deadly. One step at a time. I know even as I'm watching this, I'm thinking to myself, man, it would be great if he could just take a couple steps back. If he could just shoot 35% from three-point range, it'll be over for the rest of the league. He'll be in the MVP conversation. And I also want to mention in regards to Bam's offense that he's being viewed around some circles as a potential defensive player of the year candidate. And I had said this a couple weeks ago. I really do think he's got a very good chance. Now, his betting odds aren't great. He's right in that sweet spot where it's a great bet if you make it now because you'll yield a huge return. But on top of all that, he's just – I think he's not going to come off as much of a surprise as people were, you know, seeing last year. Again, he was starting last year. He was a third-year player. You're not quite sure what to make him. Jimmy's the story. And then all of a sudden, you know, Kendrick Nunn starts getting a lot of attention because he's undrafted. And Bam, all of a sudden, just starts doing really good at everything the way he always has. But he's getting more minutes and more opportunities, and he starts getting all-star buzz. But I don't think the defensive player of the year candidacy became a realistic one until later on in the season when everybody starts to realize, damn, he's good. The block on Jason Tatum in the playoffs, that should open some eyes. The fact that he was guarding LeBron James, the fact that he was guarding everybody as well as he does, that he does so much defensively, I think we'll start to see a lot more focus on him as a potential DPOY candidate, and I think it's well-deserved. That would be my pick. That's not homerism here. I think he's been one of the league's best defenders for all three of his seasons. He's continued to show promise. I think he's evolved even and gotten better at it, and he's just a great help defender. He's so switchable. He does so much so well. I'm curious to see whether or not, you know, what position, quote-unquote position, he starts at, whether or not it's the four or the five, and whether or not that impacts him to some degree. It shouldn't, but perhaps we'll see some kind of evolution there as well. Either way, he's a great defender, and back to his offense, I just want to see this be constant and consistent with him because I think he can be so much more effective if he's aggressive and understands that delicate balance more completely. And you know, this is the beginning of it. If he starts to see if Bam averages 20-plus points per game, right around 5-6 assists, his usual rebounds, occasional blocks, steals, those kinds of things, plays all-worldly defense, is switchable. What's stopping us from having Bam for MVP conversations? If not this year, maybe next. I think he's up there. Like, you have to recognize this. And people around the league still want to discredit what he does because he doesn't put up gaudy numbers. But I think we're starting to see that you can impact a number of ways. You know, the MVP consideration is so difficult because so much of it is narrative-driven and whether or not you change a team and you help them achieve some new level of success and things of that sort. You look at Giannis Antetokounmpo and everything he's been able to do. Well, he's putting up those numbers in Milwaukee, and he's gotten them to achieve historically great success for even a franchise that's been around as long as Milwaukee has. They've had really, really great seasons offensively, defensively. They faltered in the playoffs. But I think, you know, they've achieved a lot of regular season success, which is where those narratives are built. That's where the award is, you know, given consideration based on your regular season numbers. With Bam, I would expect him to be much more aggressive in the playoffs, as we saw last year, where he's putting up monster games in the postseason. He's trying to save himself to some degree. I think he's also just more of a all-around impactful player. But if he tweaks that a little bit, if he changes that and you start to say, you know what, when I watch Miami play, I watch Bam Adebayo impacting both offensive and defenses as the central hub for both. And that being the case, he's the best player on one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And again, my pick to move on to the Eastern Conference Finals. So if that's the case, I think he's deserving of that kind of consideration. Seems unlikely. I'm just putting it out there because I think it's well-deserved. And I think we could start to see that overall improvement if his offense takes the leap that many of us expect him to. So, well, listen, if you want to get basketball smart, it starts with listening to the Hollinger and Duncan podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. NBA analytics pioneer and front office insider John Hollinger joins Dunked On podcast host Nate Duncan to bring you scouting reports, game breakdowns, and salary cap analysis. Subscribe to Hollinger and Duncan today, wherever you get podcasts. Remember to get your team every day by just asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat as soon as you get in your car. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.